We're in 1 Peter chapter 2, starting at verse 11, and we're reading through to verse 25. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honourable, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether it be to the emperor as supreme, or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and to praise those who do good. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. Honour everyone. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honour the emperor. Servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. For this is a gracious thing when, mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. For what credit is it if, when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed, for you were straying like sheep, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your souls.
Ruth, thank you for reading. And can I add my welcome to Phil's? It's so good to have you with us, whether you're in London for just the weekend or whether you plan to be here for several years. We're thrilled that you're here, and we really hope that you'll quickly feel part of the family here among us at Euston Church. I wanted you to have another little chat to your neighbour thing. I hope you won't mind another minute chatting to them. Turn to the person next to you. Say hello. You've probably already introduced yourself. And then I want you to answer this question to each other. Which law would you most like to break? So it might be some law that seems pointless to you. It might be something to do with the rules of the trains or the buses. If it's anything too big and serious, you probably want to be careful about admitting it in polite company. Turn to the person next to you. Which law would you most like to break? Good, we better get back together there. I thought there might be some hesitation, but you all threw yourself into that exercise with a worrying amount of enthusiasm. There's great smiles and energy around the room at this point. Have you seen this picture that Mark is going to put up for us? It's Jesus merged with Che Guevara. It was actually first used by churches about 20 years ago to suggest that Jesus is edgier, more of a revolutionary than ever you realized, which he is. And so today, the revolution gets practical. If you study over at SOAS, you guys will particularly enjoy this. They love a good protest at SOAS. Anything to do with chains and placards. Do you want to join the revolution? Well, here is the plan. I'm going to tell you the strategy. Tomorrow morning, we're all going to turn up outside the places of work and study of everyone in this room. And in a minute, I'm going to put up on the screen what we're going to do. Just to warn you, it's radical, it's crazy, it's subversive. We're going to turn up at those colleges and offices tomorrow morning. And are you ready? Here's what we're going to do. Be subject to them. Does that sound a bit old-fashioned? You don't really know what the language means? Well, if you want it in one word, submit. Ugh. Does that word send a shiver down your spine? Surely that's what it meant in the Greek original. Surely that's not how you would translate the word today. No, you're right. Probably wouldn't. Here's how you translate the word today. Obey what they tell you to do. Verse 13. Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution. Accept their leadership. That's what we're going to do. Go to your office and college and submit. How'd that sound for a revolution? Not quite what you had in mind? Well, let's back up for a second just before we get into the detail. The next picture is our summary image for 1 Peter. This is the guy who's on our flyers. And we've said that really sums up the message of 1 Peter because he has an identity in Christ that is 3D, HD, compared to everyone around him. He has a calling with his new identity to live differently. But it's hard to be different when you're surrounded. Why does God put him through it? Why does he put us through it? Because as that person shines in a dark world, God is glorified. I put an extra insert in there with some notes about where we're up to in the book of 1 Peter so far. Don't worry, we're not going to go through it, but something we like to think as we go through the Bible, how is the book that we're in fitting together? I think you could almost put every part of 1 Peter into one of those three headings. And verse 11 and 12, we ended there last week, we started there this week, I think summarize much of the book. Verse 11 says, "Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles," there's the new identity, exiles. You don't belong here. You're not from here if you're a Christian. You're part of the people of God. And we read on, "Abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable." There's the different way of life. And finally, "that they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation." There is the end result of your different life, God being glorified. It's an inspiring vision. Basically means the daily distinctiveness of ordinary Christians is like an exhibition that can set off a chain reaction that leads directly to some people giving glory to God. So tell us more, Peter, about the radical life that's going to set off the chain reaction. Well, verse 13, I'm afraid it still says what it says when I read it the first time. I'm afraid submission is the word you're going to have to write into the blank if you have the handout and you want to fill in point one. Come and join the submission revolution. And that raises a question straight away. Why is submission such a God-glorifying thing? Well, at the big level, it's because submission is the opposite of sin. By the end of our reading, did you notice in verse 24, we're thinking about our old life of sin that we've died to and that Jesus has brought us alive from. What was that old way of sin like? Verse 25. "For you were straying like sheep, but have now returned to the shepherd and overseer of your soul." Here's another picture. The gospel according to this guy. He's strayed off course, but don't feel sorry for him. This guy had the best shepherd in the universe. His shepherd cared about him deeply, cared about his safety, his farm, his food. All his shepherd asked was a very simple thing. Follow me. Should have been a no-brainer, even for a sheep. But do you know what this guy did? We haven't given him a name yet. What should we call him? Stupid would probably be the appropriate name, I'm afraid. Because Stupid said, no way, shepherd. I'm not following you. There's only one shepherd in my life, and that's me. Or me, as he probably would have said it. So he wandered off, he did his own thing, and got into trouble. Crazy. But that's the story of the Bible. That's the story of all of us. We've strayed from the Good Shepherd into our own way. And it's something that we do, it's something that we like. So think about the stuff we watch. When did you last see a really interesting movie about someone who kept to the speed limit? When did James Bond or Jack Bauer ever save the day by doing exactly what their superiors had told them to do? We love rebels, because we are naturally all rebels. We're from different cultures and different personalities. We rebel in different ways, but that's what we are. Now, to become a Christian, that is to give up the life of straying off on your own and to come back to the good leadership of the Good Shepherd, to submit to him. And the thing is, when Christians now submit ourselves to the governing authorities, that speaks volume in a world full of rebels, and it gets noticed. Did you notice how comprehensive verse 13 is? Every human institution, I take it that means the national government, the local council. I guess every institution even means the rules of the library. Every authority structure God has put over your life. And I don't know how you find your mind working when you hear this, but for me, all the opt-out clauses have immediately jumped to the front of my brain. Oh, he can't mean that thing. No one sees that I do it anyway. Or he can't mean that because that would contradict other stuff in the Bible. He can't mean in the country that I come from overseas with the regime that we have back there. Well, verse 13 says, be subject for the Lord's sake. We're doing it for Jesus. So, of course, we don't obey human institutions when they tell us to contradict him. And there might be some hard thinking to do in the detail of some situations. We could talk about that next week, if you like. We're going to have another question time then. But remember the original audience. Even to a crowd who lived under mad old Roman emperors like Nero, God says the basic position is, be subject to them. And that's his word to us here in London in 2016. Verse 17, honour everyone, love the brotherhood, fear God, but also honour the emperor. I don't know if you've ever been for a walk around this area and just noticed the signs. They're everywhere. Resident permit holders only. No cycling, no skateboarding, no loading. No stopping at any time. No bowl games. Do not feed the birds. No bicycles on these railings. No dog-related antisocial behaviour. I'll leave you to work out what that's referring to. And there's even a phone number to ring if you see other people not clearing up their dog's antisocial behaviour. There's just a lot of rules out there. And that's before we even get to the rules of your college or your sports field or the rules of copyright and the internet, the rules of the underground. We could take it into bigger ways that we might flout the system, plagiarism, tax returns, the convenient but legally dubious work practices. See, in the Roman Empire, people were suspicious of Christians. They don't worship the emperor. You can't really trust that they are on board with the project. And I guess if you were a Christian, given what you've heard in 1 Peter so far, you might be tempted to fit the stereotype. I'm part of God's royal holy nation. No cycle lanes in heaven. I'm going to do what I like. And that's exactly the kind of accusation Peter tells the believers to silence by their behavior. Verse 15. For this is the will of God, that by doing good you should put to silence the ignorance of foolish people. Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover-up for evil, but living as servants of God. Obeying the rules that God has put in my life is part of silencing the slander against Christians. We're supposed to get what it means to submit better than anybody, because we are servants of God. And actually, when you think about it, it says loads, doesn't it, about your honesty, your loyalty, your integrity, your trust, if you obey the authorities. I'm tempted to think it just makes me look a bit boring. Be subject to them for the Lord's sake. Now, obviously, this is not saying never protest in a free society. Never vote against, never advocate for change. Christians have been at the heart of politics and justice issues for the last 2,000 years, quite rightly. But the point here is, you don't need the government to change before you start living the Christian life. And it is tempting, isn't it, to think, if only we Christians could actually take control of the structures of society, then we could really change the world for Jesus. Well, this seems to be saying the strategy is, if only we could just obey for his sake in a world full of rebellion, then we'd really shine as the different ones. Now, we're moving on to point two, and verse 18 just really goes round the principles that we've discussed in a quite specific situation. And before I read verse 18, do note that it's not using the narrow word for slavery in the sense that we sometimes think of it. This word for servant is more the household employee back then. It's talking about the masters that you serve in your daily life, the bosses, the supervisors and lecturers. Verse 18, servants, be subject to your masters with all respect, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. Now, that phrase, with all respect, literally all fear, probably means the fear of God. So, in other words, that's your equivalent to doing it for the Lord's sake. I submit to them because I fear him. I spoke to someone recently who said no to something quite dubious morally that they were asked to do in the workplace. And of course, we don't obey human masters when they tell us to contradict God. But again, the basic disposition towards superiors is clear. Be subject. I take it that will mean listening to their reasons for decisions before getting angry and argumentative. I take it will mean not just quietly ignoring some of the more annoying things they've asked us to do. You know, you can do that sometimes, and because their mind's on other things, they'll never really come back to it and notice. I take it this will mean that when we do have a genuine grievance with a boss, the person we'll speak to about it is, well, the company themselves. Actually, sometimes in our culture, to submit to the big bosses in the company would mean they want to know about abuses in the system. But we'll go through the system would be the thing if we're a Christian. And we'll talk in an honouring way about the people above us, not gossiping about it in the kitchen afterwards. I remember in the law office that I first worked in as a trainee solicitor, it was basically how people got through the day whinging about the management. It was basically the main thing that built camaraderie between the team. It was the main thing everybody had in common. And isn't it just very difficult, even at the best of times with the best of bosses, to submit? But look at the end of verse 18. I mean, this just raises this to a whole new level, not only to the good and gentle, but also to the unjust. And see, that's the real stinger here, isn't it? If you've got a boss who's good and considerate, thank the Lord and enjoy them while they last. Some of us here will have superiors who are not good. People who are obsessed with their own career advancement rather than looking after their team. People who are bullies rather than being gentle. And I would expect in a group this size, a few of us will be enduring under bosses for whom unjust would be precisely the right word. They have favourites, and it's not you. Maybe they're even specifically hostile to Christians. And we need to be realistic, because all of us, don't we, serve masters who are imperfect? And that means we all work for people who are prone to be affected by stress and sin, and have the potential to make unwise and unfair decisions that knock onto you in a painful way. Whatever they're like, for however long you find yourselves under them, the word of the Lord is clear. Be subject. And again, this will raise questions, and we will have a question time next week. You're not a slave. Some of us have the freedom to choose a different job or situation. This is not about pretending somebody above us is good and gentle when they blatantly aren't. But it is about me, for as long as I work for them, maintaining a standard of diligence that is completely independent of how deserved that diligence actually is. And isn't this just a very, very painful, difficult thing to do? I think actually impossible if we didn't have our final point. See, when the boss is nice, it's easy for everybody to think well of him or her. When the team do get the pay rise that was promised, everyone has a reason to work well and be motivated. Anyone can be good to good masters, basically. And equally, if you are a bad employee, of course you deserve the consequences. If you use the office stapler to staple your colleague to the wall and you get punished, then there's no point going to Adam Taylor, who works for the Lawyers Christian Fellowship, and say, I've been persecuted for being a Christian at work. Adam will tell you that you've been persecuted because you're an idiot. That's the point of verse 20. There's no credit there. But if you keep being a good and diligent employee to bosses who treat you shockingly, that, verse 21 says, is a gracious thing in the sight of God. That's the kind of moment that shows his glory to the world. Because that's the kind of moment where you really get to be like Jesus. WWJD. Do you remember that? What would Jesus do? Good question. Well, what did he do? Jesus went to work on behalf of the human race in what you might describe as challenging circumstances. Remember what happened when Jesus went to work, verse 22? He committed no sin. Neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he didn't revile in return. When he suffered, he didn't threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. That's quite different, isn't it? I wonder what sin you are most tempted into when you are treated badly. Bitterness? Laziness? Remember Jesus? He committed no sin. Aren't our words one of the big ways that we can trade blows with people who treat us badly? We're usually too polite to actually hit them, but the things that come out of our mouths can do all kinds of violence, either in front of someone's face or behind their back. Remember Jesus? Neither was deceit found in his mouth. Not even a single swear word under his breath. Little ways we can retaliate. You don't ask me nicely, maybe I won't do the job as well as I could have. You insult me in front of everyone else, I'll find a way of getting you back. Jesus, when he was reviled, he did not revile in return. It's very our culture to talk about our rights, isn't it? My rights, unless I'm treated properly right now, I won't do that work. Jesus again. When he suffered, he didn't threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. See, that's the key to why Jesus could respond in this seemingly impossible way. We've said all the way through 1 Peter, mindset and motivation drives behavior. If you know that the real judge of all is your Father, if you know that you are precious and chosen and his cornerstone, even though it's all looking a bit rubbish at the moment, if you know that the glory of the people who are abusing you will fade very quickly, but you have a future and a kind of life that will outlast it all, then maybe you could be one of God's true radicals and resist that instinct to fight back. Can we bring ourselves through the frustration and maybe with tears in our eyes to follow in his steps? Because the logic for Jesus works for us as well. Remember, he was chosen and precious. We are too. He's part of an imperishable future. We are as well. His Father, the just judge, is our Father. See, when the Good Shepherd calls us back from straying, it means following him in his footsteps on the path of suffering to glory, which is the path of doing good in the face of mistreatment, of abstaining from retaliation, of trusting your Father, and choosing that path every day is the real revolution that shows God's glory to the world. You know, some of the people this applied to in the first century would have been literal slaves. You thought you were just plugging away for old Brutus. He hits you sometimes, but you always do a good job for him because you're mindful of God. It's a terrible thing, human slavery. Rightly, Christians have been at the forefront of its abolition. But you don't have to wait for the abolition of slavery either before you start living the Christian life. And God says to a slave like that, you think you're a nobody. You are actually making the daily decision to follow in the footsteps of the King. How's that for dignity and a high calling? Friends, I think verse 18 is a hard bullet to bite. And what do I know about what you're going into tomorrow? Maybe another round of being overlooked or taken for granted. And if you are screaming inside, you don't have a clue what it's like for me, then you are probably right. But I do know that it is the cross-shaped behavior of the Christian, when no good is flowing back in the other direction, that God thinks is our moment to shine. May we pray. We'll pause for a moment of quiet prayer, and then Adam will lead us.